trying to stay on the attack, and it's Memo Diaz. Clips this up to the back post, diving header! It's Johnson for Oakland! Carlson, he scores! A chance for Oakland to put this away for good! A big goal for the Oakland Roots, it's three goals, and now surely 3 points!
Welcome to Roots Pod, an audio production of Roots Blog and member of the Rootscast Broadcast Network. It's Aaron along with John and Peter here. So you guys know that you often see in the Bay Area billboards for just the most random companies that you would never expect to see anywhere else, right? So I was driving home today and I saw one for a company called Swimply. That's simply with a W. And there was a big quote attributed to CNBC on this billboard that said, "At last, an Airbnb for swimming pools." And I swear to God that the whole quote must be something like, no one has ever thought, at last, an Airbnb for swimming pools. Because this seems like there's too much money in the Bay Area, I think is what it comes down to. And if we're going to be giving money to something called Swimply, someone should just give me money. Like, I think that's the solution here. I'll use it better than that.
Are you comfortable putting the risk of bed bugs in the hands of a total stranger? Well, I bet you feel the same about staph infections.
It's just, I don't understand. Who thinks of that? I just don't understand it. Anyway.
No, on that note, speaking of Bay Area billboards, a buddy of mine from Mobile flew out to hang out and was completely blown away by the marijuana delivery billboards, which is like triply illegal in Mobile.
We just sort of let it all hang out there. There are a lot of competing marijuana delivery services. I suppose this would be a good time to mention the Roots Blog's official supplier, the Bass Grow Shop. For all of your cannabis needs. So this episode we're recording following a 3-1 win for the Oakland Roots over Atlanta United 2 after a very frustrating first half, I think, in which I want to see the Roots put 16 shots on the board. They finally put one home at the beginning of the second half from Mikael Johnson. There was
from their worst chance.
Oh, yeah. Not the worst chance of the game at that point. It was something like the 18th or 19th shot, I think. And then conceded on a real U.S. Ellie goal just 10 minutes later with a pass to a man who was obviously in an offside position. And then, hey, made it up with another sort of U.S. Ellie goal when a penalty is awarded on what was not a penalty.
I disagree. I think
it was. I'm glad you're bringing the non-reality perspective into the podcast here.
Well, that's what we do. That's what I do. Okay.
Please tell me why that was a penalty.
Well, it was right in front of me, and you know, sometimes the camera deceives. I actually just loaded a picture onto our little photo album file where you see that the guy makes contact pretty much at below Janssen's knee. He's running in, he's one-on-one, and when I'm sitting there, I thought it was a penalty. Yeah, he may have accentuated a little bit, but, you know, it went down as a pen. I thought it was a pen.
I applaud him for accentuating it. I'm looking at this picture now, and I think he really had to do some work to end up on the ground, I'm going to be honest. But whatever. That's a makeup call for the fact that the United's only goal shouldn't have happened either. And then we got a legitimate second with through Johnny Rodriguez very late in the game. So on our last pod, you guys were very, let's say, pessimistic about the Roots' chances for the rest of the season, having watched Oakland dominate Atlanta United 2. Do you still have the courage of those convictions, or Are we moving with the breeze and now very confident about the rest of Oakland Roots season? Peter, go.
Oh, it's back on.
Oh, it's back on.
The Roots are winning the World Cup.
John?
I am still on the fence. I think a lot has to go right, especially over this next month.
Yeah.
No, I am also still on the fence. I think if the Roots had had those halves in the other order, I would feel better about that game. But it really felt like they were bashing their heads against the wall for 45 minutes. It was necessary but not sufficient result.
It was definitely a necessary result. I don't think there's any way they make the playoffs with a loss at home to Atlanta United too. And, you know, if you take these two iffy goals away, you know, they get their first and then they're sort of a consolation goal. At the same time, they did sort of blow them off the pitch. Nicholas Murray posted on Twitter afterwards the Opta stats, the expected goals. They had Oakland at 3.55 and Atlanta United at 0.49. And I think if you take away the penalty and the shot that resulted in Atlanta's goal that obviously should not have been a goal, you're still looking at like 2.8 to 0.3, which that's a pretty convincing victory. It's not huge, but that's convincing. I mean, that's the kind of performance you need to put together. I will say I thought that Oakland dominated about the first half hour, and then they did not really dominate again until the very end of the game. It was kind of even, kind of back and forth there for the middle, not the middle hour, but from about minute 30 to about minute 80, in a way that was sort of surprising after the way Oakland had blitzed Atlanta coming out of the gate. But like you said, they got the result they needed. We're not here. We're not going to sit here and sneer at results, even if it was 2-0 with a late sort of not consolation goal, but like, you know, a goal at the very end that no one really cares about. It's still the result. They did what they had to do. Mm-hmm. So let's talk playoffs. We talked about how we see the rest of Oakland season going last time. Let's talk more broadly about the league. John, why don't you just give us a sort of a rundown about where we are right now? Oakland's in eighth place. How far out are we? Where do the other teams stand at the moment?
We are in eighth. We are 1 point back of seventh and sixth. But there's also, you know, a lot of caveats at play. Las Vegas has two games in hand on us in seventh. New Mexico has five games in hand in sixth. Over into fifth, El Paso is 4 points back, or 4 points ahead, sorry, and have one game in hand. Sacramento, four games in hand, 4 points ahead. San Diego, three games in hand, and 4 points ahead. So, you know, as we just said, you know, a lot has to go right, especially in this next month of play. We look at the next five games, Los Angeles on Friday, Sacramento on the 9th, then they have El Paso, Las Vegas, and Phoenix, which are a lot of teams who are, of course, fighting for a playoff spot, and it's kind of hard what to make of them. Las Vegas has been playing really well, coming off of a 3-2 victory over Phoenix. Phoenix is a surprise. You know, you look at the table and you think they're a team that you expect to do some climbing, but at the same time, they have a lot of stuff going on. They can't figure out if Shantz is going to be the coach. There's a lot of blowback from the fans, especially online, Twitter and Instagram. And also, their fans are very upset with the lack of a statement regarding the Supreme Court ruling. So they have a lot of things toiling them right now. So you have to look at them as a win. But you know,
let me just jump
a
in
lot
right there.
Has to go right.
So let's talk about, let's use Phoenix as a sort of jumping off point real quick. So there's a couple of sort of conversations I was noting on Twitter this week. First, playing off of the USL Show podcast, I think one of the hosts is a Birmingham Legion fan, and his position on the league is generally that the top of the East is better than the top of the West. Now, everyone understands that the bottom of the East is hot garbage when we're talking about quality of team playoffs. I mean, there's like six bad teams, like really, really bad teams in the East. So you just sort of got to be middling to make the playoffs in the East. But everyone agrees that the West is much more competitive. A lot of people disagree that the top of the West is not better than the top of the East. One of the things I was looking at after I sort of scrolled through that brief discussion, because there's not a lot of places that are rating teams, but I was looking over at 538, which does their soccer power index, which is flawed, but you know, we have it, includes the USL championship, which is pretty great. It posits that San Antonio is the best team in the league, followed by Tampa and Louisville City, who are both Eastern teams. But then it's a bunch of Western teams. But the reason I'm jumping off from what you had said about Phoenix is that there are three teams in the West whose current playoff positioning does not reflect where the 538's SBI has them. And they are basically, they're Phoenix, Oakland, and Orange County, who the computers over there at 538 estimate to be much better than they are currently playing at. So, I mean, what do you got? Do you think there's a chance we see a turnaround at Phoenix? I don't see any reason. I mean, their current slide is sort of difficult to fathom. I mean, they lost to Loudoun and followed that up with a loss to Las Vegas Lights. I mean, this is sort of difficult to understand, and that they're not getting any breaks here. They're about to face Memphis on the road, Louisville City on the road, and then they come back and play Sacramento Republic, who are pretty good. So, and that's after hosting Orange County. I bring that up because we're talking about all the teams ahead of us who need to drop points. Phoenix, I feel like Phoenix is a good candidate for someone to come and sneak up behind us as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have three games in hand and they're only 3 points back. So that's a bit scary. You know, it's only one game back technically. I haven't looked up their schedule, but you hope that these games keep on falling the way they have been. It's really hard to make what they're going to do, what their plan is. You know, their fans are clamoring for a new coach and they're citing Richard Chaplow in Orange County and how they brought in an interim coach in the middle of the season and that pushed them to a championship. So their sights are set on that. It's hard to say. Peter, what's your take?
I don't know what's going on in Phoenix. I don't feel like I can really speak to that. You know, I'm going to disagree to an extent with what Aaron said earlier about good teams and bad teams. I think that the good news for the Roots is that every team in this league is complete shit. Colorado Springs has just completed a 2-0 loss to Hartford, and admittedly to Tom Brewitt's Hartford. Yeah, and admittedly, wow. It's a Wednesday night game that they had to fly to Connecticut for, which, I mean,
yeah,
they just took the forfeit.
It's a walkover,
right? They hired a Connecticut team to one day contracts, sent them out there to lose 2-0. No one has to fly. What worries me right now, especially with the number of games in hand that the Roots have, is that the Roots would really benefit from differentiation. You know, at this point, the Roots are not catching second in the West. So they want San Antonio and Colorado Springs to win out in interconference games, except against the Roots, and take points off Las Vegas, take points off of Rio Grande, take points off of Las Vegas. I said Las Vegas. I meant to say Los Angeles one of those.
They could take points off of Las Vegas twice.
Possibly. Multiple times. Yeah, exactly. We've talked about the next games being important, the next games all being against sort of playoff cusp teams, and that's obviously the case. I thought that the Roots looked better than their result on Saturday, which is good because the result was already pretty good. But it was Atlanta and it really doesn't mean much other than 3 points. You know, if the team could build on it, then it means something, but it's really up to them whether it does. But if it clicks, I mean, you know, you go on a good 5-game run here and, you know, suddenly you're in fourth and looking down at a bunch of these teams and they're suddenly under pressure to win these games in hand, you know. Both Arsenal and Tottenham fans can tell you from this past season that games in hand are miserable. Yeah.
That's a decent point. It would be nice if there was some differentiation right now. There are third right now is San Diego Loyal on 28 points. Ninth is LA Galaxy 2 on 24 points. So that's seven teams within 4 points of each other, which really does highlight how tight the West is. And I want to just add to the sort of the discussion that I was having with myself earlier about the quality of East versus West. Everyone's favorite Twitter tactician, John Morrissey, had his team of what, like the half season or whatever, and it is dominated with Western Conference players.
10 of 11 starters are Western.
Yeah.
And I think probably like 7 of 11 backups. Yeah, completely dominated by Western Conference teams.
I just, John, for your sake, there is one Eastern Conference team whose place in the table is not reflective of their 538 soccer power index. And you'll love this. It is Detroit City, who sit, let me look, they sit fourth in the Eastern Conference table. But 538 estimates them to be much closer to the bottom of the league than that. And that has a lot to do with the fact that there are a bunch of crappy teams in the East, like crappy even by Peter's standards, right? Because Detroit City, I think, was at one point 7-1-4, but they had something like 6 wins against the dregs of the Eastern Conference, and they've stopped playing them now. And their record is coming back down to earth, although they're still in fourth, because one thing that's important to do is beat the teams you should beat, which they absolutely did, and that is to their credit. I don't want to take anything away from them for that, especially since we're touting Oakland's win over Atlanta United 2 for exactly the same reason.
I raised this last week, and I think an interesting thing looking at the table is that the teams on either side of the roots in the table right now are two MLS junior varsity teams. And I don't know if those two, you know, I have speculated that Vegas are going to get worse because LAFC cannot keep Danny Trejo in reserve at the way he's currently playing. I did look at the MLS table, and LAFC are in first, so they may not be trying to call up kids. Likewise, Galaxy are competing in the middle of the Western Conference, but Preston Judd is young, Cameron Dunbar is young, you know, important guys who contribute to those teams, and if they start getting called up, those teams are going to tank. Their goals are going to be gone.
Is Garrett Bale joining LAFC soon? I mean, that might be Danny Trejo's spot.
That's what I was thinking, too. He would eat up Danny Trejo or Cal Jennings' spot. But you still don't know what to expect, when they might want to get him time. You know, they play San Jose later on this season, and you got to think that's a good time to, you know, sharpen those young guys. But to your point with Detroit, you know, Las Vegas plays them next game. You know, I'm definitely rooting for Detroit that game. We need a lot to go right. Yeah.
That game is really two very different kinds of dirt bags. Really wish there wasn't that silence after that.
Don't worry, I'll edit it out.
You know, but if the JV teams tank, the Roots are suddenly in a playoff spot right now. I mean, RGV is on their heels, and Phoenix is one of those teams behind them as well. And, you know, I'm not ready to count Phoenix out entirely. But the Roots don't quite control their destiny as regards Phoenix, but it's, you know, it's pretty close. They have a 3-point lead. So, you know, I think there's a good chance. I also wonder, you know, El Paso has turned their season around, but sometimes, you know, teams start really bad, fix it in the middle of the season, and then the cracks show again at the end of the season. It's a long season. And, you know, El Paso is ahead of the Roots, but only by 4 points. You know, it wouldn't take much of a stumble for them to fall back out of the playoffs. So, you know, I think that the hope is there.
It seems like a common characteristic, and this is true last season, I bet it's true all the time, it's true in most sports, but defensively solid teams are the ones that look really good, look like they're really set up to make the playoffs and to make a nice playoff run. And as much as I like watching the sort of high-octane, edge-of-your-seat-for-95-minutes Oakland Roots matches, it is notable that, at least in terms of goals allowed, they are a step behind many of the teams they are fighting with for playoff positioning. Right, and if you look at the table, San Antonio has surrendered 14 goals. They're in the middle of their 16th game. Colorado Springs 19 through 15. Sacramento 12 through 15, New Mexico 12 through 14. I mean, those teams look like they are in a very good spot for the playoffs. And Oakland is down here having surrendered 27 goals in 19 games, and it's working, but it does feel like that is the half of the pitch they're going to need to fix to turn those ties into wins in order to get over the hump, I think, ultimately.
On that point, I mean, the thing that I was going to say about the Atlanta game before we moved off of that was that I thought that Nane had an incredible game, and I thought that Fesore had a pretty good game, and I wonder how much the two of them playing well together contributed to Janssen and Dennis succeeding in this game. I mean, obviously, yeah, it didn't turn into a bunch of goals, but that's sort of the, you know, the reason I had wanted us to switch back to two center backs is so that we could get Fesore and Nane both into the team, or two of Fesore, Nane, and Hernandez. And Atlanta United are probably the easiest team the Roots have faced to completely dominate in midfield, but they did it, and they did it with those two guys as like defensive destroyers who then they force the turnover, and then they have someone close by to pass to, that is each other. And that frees up the forwards to come at, the forward attacking midfielders to come in and get the ball. And I want to see it again. I thought Nane looked better than Fesore, and so if I had to pick for next game, I'd probably do Nane and Hernandez. If only, I mean, and I don't know if that's actually what I would pick or if it's what I think that Juan Guerra would pick. But, it's, you know, some combination that has more midfield stability. I really thought that that's one of the things that the Roots looked most improved about the Roots performance.
One question I thought I'd pose to you guys is the effect of Janssen playing higher up the field, what it does for Formella, especially with Azokar on the mend. What do you think happens with that left back midfield role that, you know, it's Azokar hasn't missed a game until this last one? I mean, Janssen looked so effective in that top role that, you know, looks like you gotta keep starting him there.
I agree. I thought it was very effective, and I thought that Formella in not the wing back role, but in the wing back space, right? He wasn't tracking back like Azucar has, but he was occupying that space and the attacks were building from, you know, from that area. I thought that was incredibly effective. I would like to see it again. I mean, it's a very balls to the wall kind of setup. So I think there's going to be a time and a place for it. It might be the sort of the thing they go to at the end of games now when they need a goal, you know, rather than go to the 4-4-2 that they have gone to. Maybe just, you know, swap out the wingbacks for forwards and go like a 3-2-5. You know, go totally old school. Well, but I agree. I think Janssen further up is very effective because he's got and this it's going to be too bad if Venice takes him back before the end of the season. Him on the ball, I think he's got more quality than maybe any other player in the league. You know, his finishing touch is not all the way there, and I think that's probably why he was available from Venice, but he is a step above everybody else in the league. So I think putting him further forward where that part of his game is so much more threatening. If you can get him the ball in good spaces, good things are going to happen. So stick him further forward. I totally agree.
I thought that the Formella positioning was interesting because it's the starkest demonstration we have to date that Guerra's setup is not symmetrical. You know, when you write it down on a team sheet, it looks nice and symmetrical, but Rito and Azokar do not do the same thing.
Yeah.
And in this game, and with Formella there, it sort of was a four at the back. It was just a right back and three center backs, and then everyone else was a midfielder or forward. And I don't know if that's going to work against a team other than Atlanta, But if it does work defensively against a team other than Atlanta, that gives us the midfield pivot and a shitload of forwards, which the Roots want. Their forwards are pretty good, and the more they have out there, the more they sort of overwhelm defenses.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, where they're not lining up symmetrical, I mean, you see that directly with Memo. Definitely a different role than Rito has played all year. Finally brought him back a little more, allowing him to send in those crosses that he's time and time again said is the best in the league. So, you know, when the ball over the top to Rito's not working and you want to add a little wrinkle, you have that now. You have some experience, bring in Memo and send in those balls into the box.
More goals. I just want to see more goals.
I'm out here advocating for more defense, and Peter's like 4-3. Whenever game 4-3, what do I care?
This may be tied to my pessimism. It's like if the Roots were in fourth place, but teetering on the edge of falling out of the playoffs, I'd be like, sure, shore up the defense, great. But if there's like a decent chance the Roots aren't making the playoffs anyway, I better see some goddamn 4-3 wins and losses.
So here's another question. What do we got to do in these next 5 games to solidify this playoff run?
Are these listener-submitted questions?
No.
John listens.
Can we redo this and say it's a listener-submitted question?
So we got a nice write-in question from a follower on Twitter. He said, what do the Roots have to do in the next 5 games to solidify this playoff round? A reminder, it's LA, Sacramento, El Paso, Las Vegas, and Phoenix.
Yeah, step one is they've got to win the home games. And of those three, it's El Paso, Las Vegas, and Phoenix. They can get away with not winning all of those, and I'm sure they're absolutely going to try. If I know anything about the Oakland Roots, it's that they are going to make making the playoffs as complicated as it can possibly be.
Is 8 points enough? 2 wins and 2 draws against...
just in the next 5 matches, not for the rest of the season.
Yeah, no, I mean for the next 5 matches.
Okay.
I want to say 10 points is what I want. 8 points is probably good enough to... I don't want to say tread water because I think it's better than treading water. I think it moves us towards the playoffs.
Well.
Does it? 8 points in 5
games. Yeah. The trick is going to be figuring out where to put that loss, though. I think it's probably got to be, and you would hate to do this, but if you're going to pick one of these games to lose, it has to be either Sacramento or El Paso. And you got to beat the other one. Because those are the two who are ahead of us in the table for the next of the teams we play in the next 5 matches. I don't think we want to be losing touch with those teams.
I think a draw away to Sacramento is a good result.
Oh, I think it's a great result.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As that is the game I most want to win. And it's like, if we get to the end of the season and the Roots don't make the playoffs, the Sac win away is what's going to make me feel the best. But yeah, a draw there. Honestly, I want to see him beat Galaxy on the road. That just seems like no one shows up to Carson. I don't think that should be. It's only a road game in that they're staying in a hotel. It's a short flight. There are no fans.
Get this. Yeah. Tickets on StubHub to that game in Dignity Health Park are $59. Can you believe that?
$59? To go see LA Galaxy 2 host the Oakland Roots?
Yes.
Honest to God, if you put on a generic lanyard and a suit but no tie, I bet you just walk right in.
I think if you put on if you have one of those metal clipboards that opens up, I'm pretty sure you can just go anywhere.
Put on a holographic vest, yellow.
Put a name tag.
You'll find yourself handed something and you're going to have to work.
I think to answer the question, to finish my answer seriously, they have I think they have to beat the teams below them. We're not in a place right now where we can be letting other teams back into this race. So they beat the teams below them and that's LA Galaxy 2 and Phoenix Rising. I would like to see them beat Las Vegas Light, especially since it's at home. I think that is a game they have to have. And then you've got Sacramento and El Paso. And like I said, you can't let both of them run away at this point. Want to keep one of them in sort of shouting distance.
I want to look at this in advance of the Lights game. I'll work on this for the podcast and the preview before that. I'm curious to go back and look at the Roots' performance this season against teams that focus so heavily on a couple players. Now, I guess Vegas has several players other than Trejo and Jennings, but those guys are the big goal threats. And I wonder how the Roots play against teams with like big goal threats like that versus teams where it's sort of all of the forwards and midfielders are kind of contributing to the attack. So I'll look into that, or I'll forget. But Galaxy is probably a good preview of that. I mean, Preston Judd and Michael Salazar and Cameron Dunbar, sort of those guys are their threat. And they're all young, you know, just knock them over. Emery knows how to do that. Just sit some kid down.
Put Nani in there just to shove them all down. Big, well, scary guy.
But Barbier is the largest soccer player in the field, should simply eat the other soccer players.
Right.
Solve most of the problems.
That is what happened to that kid from El Paso. Everyone thinks he got moved on to a bigger club, but Danny Barbier just fucking ate him.
Just consumed him.
I was going to try to work this in, that what the Roots need to do over the next five games is reach over the console of the limousine and rest the steering wheel away from Las Vegas Lights, who are ahead of them in the table.
All right, so we have the first match of this stretch is LA Galaxy 2 this Friday. Peter, what are you thinking? You've clearly at least looked at LA Galaxy 2's FB ref page before this podcast recording.
That's right.
Yeah.
Galaxy, God damn it. Galaxy have a -7 goal differential. They, in their last five games, drawn Rio Grande Valley, lost to Switchbacks, beat Monterey, lost to Sac, and beat Miami in Miami. So they're clearly capable of doing things. I think that the Roots beat them 2-1. John, what's your prediction for this weekend?
I'm going to say 2-0 Roots. And to your point, you know, it's you wonder when the JV factor is going to come into play, when Preston Judd's going to move around, who's going to bounce in and out of the roster. You know, they're definitely one of those teams that you think are going to drop points at somewhere down the road. So it's a must win. I mean, even Sacramento, that's the one I want, man. I mean, like you mentioned earlier, if we're not going to make the playoffs, just beat Sac. You know, it's like Cal and Stanford. We might have a shitty season, but just win the fucking axe and all is forgiven.
You seem to be speaking from a place of deep personal pain. Is it? Do I sense pain?
That's a good way of putting it. Yes.
Yeah. I think Oakland is streets ahead of LA Galaxy too. There's no doubt in my mind. But I also recall last year thinking that there were. I think it was an LA Galaxy game, or it was either LA Galaxy or Tacoma Defiance, where I put on the blog. I was like, we're at the point in the season where the developmental squads are just sort of outclassed by the actual professionals in this league. And they went out and the Roots lost their next at least one game against a developmental squad and possibly the next two. And my God, they had to hold on for dear life in the final match of the season against a developmental squad. So every like superstitious bone in my body is saying, don't say it. Absolutely do not say. Just predict the loss. Just, you know?
Just predict the loss.
Yeah, just predict. So
you're allowed to predict the loss.
2-1 LA Galaxy 2 in this
one. There we go.
Oh, shit.
I think I just get the sense that I still think the Roots are going to make the playoffs, but they're going to make it as complicated as they possibly can. It's going to be bad for the old blood pressure, but I think it's going to happen. And this is going to be one of those games where you're like, what is happening and why is it happening? Like I said, I'm pretty sure Oakland is better than LA Galaxy too. I get the sense that we're in for some USL level bullshit.
Got that feeling in your stomach, huh?
I do. I got a pit in my right there in the pit of my stomach. I got a premonition about this one. Fingers crossed I'm wrong about it.
I can feel that. That's me watching every Tottenham game.
Yeah, but that is completely justified.
It is totally.
Well, there you have it. Two predictions of a victory and one sort of preemptive, protective loss prediction. Up the Roots. We'll talk to you in a week.
Up God's own Oakland Roots.